When we try and make sense of who people are, we assign categories to them. And that helps us figure out what sort of person they are, and so we then know how to relate to them. And in the media and in our public life in recent times, two people that are probably top of mind are Shane Warne and Vladimir Putin. And Shane Warne, you sort of assign him to the category of, you know, sporting superstar, right? But the thing about Shane Warne is that he transcended sport. And when they do their memorial service, there'll be probably musicians and rock stars and all sorts of other people that will want to be part of that, because in some way, Shane, there was a category for Shane Warne of international sporting star, but he in some way and amazingly transcended that. And so although it can give us an entry point, it's not a sufficient way of understanding who Shane Warne is. And we could understand Vladimir Putin as the president of Russia, and that's what his elected title is. But people have been wrestling with what he's been doing, and they've been appending other names to him like Tsar. And they've been looking back to other categories of Russian leaders from history to try and make sense of who he is and what he is doing at the moment, you see. The way we make sense of who people are is we assign previously understood categories to them, and they may not be a perfect fit, but they are what we need to do to try and understand who they are and make sense of their place in the world. And at the moment, we are doing the same thing with Jesus. And we're doing it in the lead up to Easter, and we're trying to do it in a way that peels back and past and around our familiarity. You know, like we follow Jesus, we talk about Jesus every day, we sing songs about Jesus, all these sorts of things, but who is he really? And so we're wanting to stop and pause and look at some categories that are assigned to Jesus to help us make sense of who Jesus is. And we're looking at three categories over three Sundays that Jesus in the scriptures is understood as prophet, priest, and king. And we have to do some work because they're not like everyday categories for us. Now, like a sporting superstar is an everyday category for us. We have an immediate grasp of that. But if I talk about a prophet, well, we probably have an idea that it's for someone who speaks for God. But when I say priest, well, we might think, is that someone like in an Anglican church that wears robes? And what does it actually mean? When we say Jesus is a priest, what does it actually mean? And so we're going to do some work today to try and unpack Jesus as priest. Because I think the role of Jesus as priest is something that we have sort of come to take for granted. You know, there's lots of amazing things that go on in your life and in my life that you just sort of take for granted. Like the fact that you can pull out your smartphone and you can immediately get information from anywhere in the world. You can call almost anyone in the world. And you can do, like I was once a few years ago and we were very fortunate enough to visit Easter Island. And I was on Easter Island 5 hours from no flight from nowhere in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. And I was booking other plane flights from the middle of the Pacific Ocean on my phone. I mean, just take it for granted, right? Then there's other more serious things that we just take for granted. Most of us here will have had polio vaccines. And you and I just sort of take it for granted that, and we blithely go through life that virtually no one we know has polio or has had polio. But it's only a few short years ago that people knew about people who had deformed legs because they were infected with polio as kids, or lived their lives in iron lungs, these sort of metal containers that helped you breathe because your own muscles couldn't help you breathe. There was a serious problem of polio that had actually got worse because sanitation had got better, and so people's natural immunity to polio had reduced because there was less raw sewage and other things around the place, and so it became more of an issue in the middle of the 20th century, but then it was dealt with by a vaccine that you and I don't necessarily understand how it works, and we were given it when we were kids, so we don't even remember having it, and yet we live in the benefits of it. And it's the same when we look at Jesus as priest. We, I think, just take it for granted that yes, we are accepted by God, that yes, we're forgiven by God, yes, we can approach God at any time, in any place, and there's no rigmarole, we have no doubt that God will reject us, all these sorts of things. We just sort of go through life and we take them for granted. But there was a time when they were not for granted, when they were not sure, where people didn't know whether that was the case. And when we read through the Gospels, we see that Jesus, the people that he had the most conflict with were the priests, the chief priests. And we're coming into Easter, and when you read the Gospel accounts, there's all of these, the conflict between Jesus and the priests, and the priests are trying to kill Jesus, and Jesus is calling them out for their behaviour, and then he's doing prophetic actions of cleansing the temple, which the priests were in charge of. And he pronounces judgment on the temple in a prophetic role. But then Jesus gets crucified on Passover in the shadow of the temple where lots of other sacrifices were going on. And when the early church was trying to figure out what it actually meant when Jesus died and rose again, in the shadow of the cross, in the light of the conflict with the chief priests, the writer to the Hebrews says this in chapter 4. Therefore, since we have a great high priest who has ascended into heaven, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold firmly to the faith we profess. And so a category that they put Jesus in to understand who he is and what he did was the category of high priest. Now, priests, we just think, oh, that's a title for someone in a different denomination to the Baptist denomination. But a priest in the biblical understanding is someone who represents God to people and represents people to God. Like they form a bridge between God and people. And in Hebrews chapter 5, verse 1, it says, every high priest is selected from among the people and is appointed to represent the people in matters related to God, to offer gifts and sacrifices for sins. And so a priest is someone who is a go-between, if you like, that helps connect heaven and earth, that helps connect God and people. But the book of Hebrews, and there's lots of it in the book of Hebrews, and I encourage you to go and read it, or just go through and read it in one sitting, because it lays out the explanation and understanding of it in more detail than I can do in our few short minutes here today. But it explains that ordinary priests would get appointed and then they'd get old and then they'd die. Ordinary priests would have to take in sacrifices for their own cleansing before they could bring in sacrifices for other people's cleansing. And so there was limitations to ordinary priests. And so they were not sufficient to be able to bring assurance of forgiveness and new life and cleansing and all those sorts of things. And so, but they gave a pointer to, they were a signpost to someone that would come in the future, and that is Jesus. It's a bit like if you're going out to, is it Ballarat where Creel Castle is? Is that place up there? And you might, as you're driving along the road, you might see a sign that has a sort of a picture of a castle on it, right? It's not the actual castle, and it sort of looks like a castle. But then when you get there, the real castle is the thing, not the sign anymore. And Hebrews talks about the fact that the high priest or the priests and also the sacrifice was, and the tabernacle and the temple were symbols, they were signs. They were like the two-dimensional sign that pointed to the three-dimensional reality. They were a category which pointed to some truth about Jesus but was transcended by Jesus. And Hebrews goes on to say, well, Jesus was the perfect high priest because he was not sinful. And he's alive forever. So we don't have to keep going and finding another priest. But there's another way that Jesus transcended the category of priest. And Hebrews talks about the fact that Jesus was not just the priest, he was also the sacrifice. You see, the Old Testament, and God had set up this signpost in the Old Testament that if you're going to live close with God, if you're going to have the tabernacle, which is God's house, sitting in the middle of your camp, in the middle of your city, then there needs to be things to make sure that you can survive that. Because the biblical witness is true that when you come up close to God and you're sinful, it's pretty scary. When the Ten Commandments were given, people said, whoa, we don't want to come any closer to God. And when Peter helped Jesus with his boat, and Jesus said, throw down the net on the other side, and the fish came in, Peter's reaction was, go away from me, Lord, I'm a sinful man. You see, the biblical data is that we can't just waltz into God's presence willy-nilly. We can't just go in there assuming that it's okay for us to go. Now, the reality is we can because of what Jesus has done, but that's sort of so buried, like it's, we take it for granted that we have lost sometimes the need for this thing, the need for this cleansing, the need for this assurance of forgiveness, this need for a covenant of forgiveness. And so the Old Testament pointed to the reality that priests couldn't just go in on their own behalf. They had to take a sacrifice with them, something that was given to them by God, like an animal that God created, right? And they had to take that in, that they weren't able to do it themselves, into a physical temple. But Hebrews says, actually, that's appointed to the heavenly reality, and the perfect high priest can take his own sacrifice in to the into the heavenly place where heaven and earth intersect, the heavenly tabernacle, and establish a covenant of forgiveness that you and I need desperately. You know, if someone, a friend of yours is late for lunch and they say, oh, I'm sorry, you say, oh, yeah, I'll forgive you. You're like, you don't need a big sacrificial system for that, do you? Right? But when the Ukraine conflict is resolved at some point in the future, please God. It won't just be as simple, sorry, I was late for lunch, that's all right. No. Right? The reality of what happened is much deeper. The reality of the break in relationship and the pain and the injustice is much deeper. It's not just a, oh, forget about it, move on sort of scenario. And Hebrews talks about how Jesus' sacrifice is the establishment of a new covenant. His death is the establishment of a covenant. Just like, and Hebrews talks about this, it's a bit like when you have a will. Well, I don't get to inherit my parents' stuff until they die. And Hebrews says the will or the testament of God's gracious forgiveness is assured because there's a death that has meant that it's happened. And the outward cleansing of things that they got used to in the Old Testament with the sprinkling of things by blood, Hebrews says that the outward sprinkling doesn't actually purify you to the depth that you need it. But the death and resurrection, the death and the sacrifice of Jesus purifies our spirits and souls in the ways we actually need it so that we can actually be with God. And it says at the end of Hebrews chapter 9, Christ was sacrificed once to take away the sins of many, to bear the sins of many. And so sometimes we think because it's been a common way of thinking about it, we think it in legal terms. You know, you've done something wrong, so Jesus then takes the punishment for your sin. But it's actually deeper than that. And Hebrews talks about that. It's not just Jesus taking the punishment for your sin, it's Jesus actually taking the sin. It's like sin is like an infection in you. And it gets taken out of you and it's taken away by him. Is taken onto you and it's borne away. He is dealt with in him, and condemned in him, so that you are free from it and I am free from it. You see, Hebrews says that the previous sacrifices, they used to happen daily and weekly and monthly and seasonally, over and over and over again in the temple, because they were inadequate. But this sacrifice of Jesus was once for all. That's why we don't have that's why sacrifices are so unfamiliar to us, because they've been superseded by the once-for-all sacrifice. But God so arranged it that there was a two-dimensional signpost that pointed to the three-dimensional reality of what Jesus actually did. And we can trust Jesus for that. Now, there's lots and lots of books been written about how the crucifixion actually works, theories of atonement and all those sorts of things. And it's good for us to ponder those things and the different ways of understanding it. But Hebrews talks about, gives us the category of sacrifice and covenant and cleansing and purification and bearing away of sins as a way for us to understand that. And so I'd encourage you this Easter season to read Hebrews, to reflect it on it, to sink into it, to be absorbed by it, to reconnect with the reality of it. So it's not just some blasé thing, it's not just some thing that we take for granted anymore. We looked last week that Jesus was the prophet. And we saw how that Moses had said there would be one that would come after him and that you need to listen to him. And Jesus was identified as that prophet. And then we also remembered that on the Mount of Transfiguration, God from the cloud said, "This is my son, listen to him." Jesus is understood as the one who speaks for his heavenly Father. And so our appropriate response is to listen. And when the Bible says to listen, it's not just listen and go, "Oh, that's nice." But it's listen, I better do something. And so what's the appropriate response for us when we recognize that Jesus is in the category of priest and sacrifice? Well, this is the amazing thing. Hebrews again tells us about this. When he's explaining the two-dimensional signpost of the tabernacle and the temple, that there was an outer court where priests offered sacrifices, and there was an inner court, there was the Holy of Holies, and the high priest only went in there right to where God was, the place where heaven was on earth, that the high priest only got to go there once a year on the Day of Atonement and only after a whole series of special sacrifices. There was special and limited access to the very throne room of God. But that was a two-dimensional picture that points to a three-dimensional reality. And in Hebrews chapter 10, it says this: "Therefore, brothers and sisters, since we have confidence to enter the most holy place," not the two-dimensional tabernacle on earth, but the most holy place in heaven. "Since we have confidence to enter the most holy place by the blood of Jesus, by a new and living way opened for us through the curtain that is his body, and since we have a great priest over the house of God, let us draw near to God with a sincere heart and with full assurance that faith brings, having our hearts sprinkled to cleanse us from our guilty conscience and having our bodies washed with pure water." That's a reference to baptism. "Let us hold unswervingly to the hope we profess, for he who is promised is faithful." The appropriate response to the priesthood and the sacrifice of Jesus is to draw near to God. The temple curtain, which kept everybody out except for the high priest once a year, was torn in two. The way is now always open, not just for the priest, but for anyone who would come. Anyone who comes in faith. Anyone who comes trusting in Jesus, the way to the Father. And it wasn't just a matter-of-fact, simple, ho-hum thing that was required to enable that to happen. It was a deep and costly thing that was required so that you and I can be sure that it's for us. The very least we can do is recognize and honor what God has done by taking advantage of the open highway to the very presence of God. Drawing near to God, to worship and honor God, to be with God. Something we should never take for granted. And we should make is a big and enduring and regular part of our everyday lives.